And welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Monday, July 27th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. Senate Republicans proposing to reduce the current $600 extra in weekly unemployment benefits provided by the federal government to $200 per week for a couple of months, or until states can provide a 70% wage replacement. It's already being rejected by the Democrats. This is part of the coronavirus economic aid package released by the Senate Republicans today. President Donald Trump visiting a biotech company in North Carolina working on a coronavirus vaccine, touting the latest breakthroughs. President's National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien testing positive for COVID-19, the highest-ranking Trump administration official known to have tested positive. White House says O'Brien has mild symptoms and has been self-isolating and working from a secure location off-site. And former Congressman John Lewis, the body arriving in Washington where he is lying in state in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda, part of a week-long tribute to the civil rights icon. And we start in the U.S. Senate and the presentation of the Republicans' proposal for the next coronavirus aid bill. In total, about $1 trillion. That compares to the House Democratic bill passed a few months ago of $3 trillion. Here's the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell.
Just like in March with the CARES Act, Senate Republicans have authored another bold framework to help our nation. So now we need our Democratic colleagues to reprise their part as well. They need to put aside the partisan stonewalling we saw on police reform, rediscover the spirit of urgency that got the CARES Act across the finish line, and quickly join us around the negotiating table. It will take bipartisan cooperation to make the HEALS Act into law for the American people. The Senate will not waste time with pointless partisanship. There's a reason why even Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer themselves have publicly downplayed the multi-trillion dollar socialist manifesto they published some weeks back and have suggested the real serious discussion would begin when Republicans released our outline. We have produced a tailored and targeted draft that will cut right to the heart of three distinct crises facing our country: getting kids back in school, getting workers back to work, and winning the healthcare fight against the virus. Kids, jobs, and healthcare. Kids, jobs, and healthcare.
The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor. The Republican plan includes about $105 billion for schools, $16 billion in new money for testing, and a second round of direct payments to individuals and families. And under the heading jobs, they are proposing a second, more targeted round of forgivable small business loans and a more limited enhanced federal unemployment benefit. Here is more from Senator McConnell.
Since our nation has one foot in the pandemic and one foot in the recovery, our economic policies have to acknowledge both sides of that coin. Chairman Grassley will introduce another round of direct checks for households at the same amount as before, with even more support for families who care for vulnerable adult dependents. Chairman Collins and Rubio have designed a sequel to their historic PPP to help prevent more layoffs of American workers. And Republicans want to continue a federal supplement to state unemployment insurance. In fact, we'll propose a weekly dollar amount that is eight times what Democrats put in place when they controlled the White House and Congress during the Great Recession. But we have to do it in a way that does not slow down reopening. We're also going to help this country pivot into recovery. The American people don't just want relief, they want opportunity, so long as the reopenings can be safe.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, on the floor earlier today, reacting to the Republican plan and specifically about the federal unemployment insurance benefit enhancement. Here's the Democratic leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer.
According to reports, the White House and Senate want to extend the enhanced unemployment benefits the Democrats secured in the CARES Act, but only provide a percentage of a worker's former wage. There are four reasons this is a terrible policy. First, it would hurt the unemployed. If you've lost your job through no fault on your own, Republicans say take a 30% tax cut. Sorry. If you've lost your job through no fault of your own, Republicans want you to take a 30% pay cut. Can you believe that? You've lost your job, you can't get to work, the administration has bungled this crisis, and now they want to take $1,600 out of your pocket every single month. Blaming the victim, blaming the victim. Maybe again, because some of those Republican hard right money people don't want to pay taxes to help anybody, don't want the federal government to help anybody. Let me tell you, my Republican friends, you can't do this without the federal government and the federal government's resources. The private sector can't take care of this on their own. That's one reason. Second, it would exacerbate poverty. A recent study showed the enhanced benefits had prevented 12 million Americans from slipping into poverty. It's probably been the greatest anti-poverty program that we've had in a very, very long time. Why on earth would we slash and burn benefits keeping American families out of poverty? Third, it will devastate our economy. One of the few things that has this economy not getting worse is that people have money in their pockets to buy goods. Consumer spending is going up. You know why, my Republican friends? In large part because of the generous benefit in the pandemic unemployment insurance. Mark Zandi, other great economists, have said just that. Just that. Consumer purchases are helping the economy from getting worse. There's money in the pockets of consumers to help them pay the bills and shop in stores and more. What do our Republican friends want to do? Cut the benefits to Americans who are spending the money as soon as they get it, taking one of the few policies stimulating the economy off the table. That's why an analysis from a respected economic forecaster at Moody's, hardly a political organization, say that reducing these benefits or letting them expire could cost over a million more jobs this year. And fourth and finally, the ideologues here get together and come up with a plan and it doesn't work. It's going to be impossible to implement.
The Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor. And that plan is to cut the federal unemployment benefit enhancement from $600 a week to $200 as states transition to implement a system designed to provide about 70% wage replacement for laid-off workers. That's from the Republicans. Senator Schumer also going through a number of other provisions in the Republican plan that he disagrees with, such as not having hazard pay for essential workers and not extending the eviction moratorium. Also in the plan that the Democrats don't like, business liability protection for coronavirus-related lawsuits. The Senate had expected to start its August break a week from Friday. The House had planned to leave this Friday. That's now all dependent upon negotiations for the next coronavirus aid package. One part of the House Democratic version of the economic relief bill that passed a few months ago, $500 billion in aid to states to shore up their budgets hit hard by the pandemic. That's not in the Senate Republican version. And New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, reacted during a teleconference today with reporters.
I understand Washington is rife with politics. I understand that Washington is not willing to put aside politics even in the middle of a COVID pandemic, which is just disgusting, frankly. But it's also devastating economic news. Even the Wall Street Journal, even Republican economists will all tell you that there can be no economic recovery if you starve the state and local governments. They've documented this from past economic recoveries. They went back to the last economic recovery and said the fact that the state and local governments had to lay off workers was bad for the economy. The fact that the state and local governments couldn't incentivize the marketplace was bad for the economy. So we know what they're doing. Forget the politics. We know what they're doing, as a matter of fact, will hurt the economic recovery. We know that the Senate Republicans don't want to help the states because they think the states that primarily have the most COVID cases are Democratic states. That's true. I think that's hypocritical because, as I've said, they don't have problems taking money from the Democratic states. Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul are federal bag men, to use a different expression. They take more federal money for their state than they put in. They've been taking New Yorkers' money for years, putting it in a bag in Washington and bringing it home to their state. Well, we're not going to bail out New York. Well, why were you so good at getting bailed out by New York for all those years? For no good reason, by the way. It was just taking money from New York for your state.
The New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on a teleconference with reporters. He also defended the weekend crackdown on more than 100 bars and restaurants in the New York City area for coronavirus social distancing violations, including overcrowding and workers not wearing masks. Some of those establishments could have their liquor licenses suspended. This is Washington Today. As mentioned at the top of the program, the National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien has tested positive for COVID-19, the highest-ranking Trump administration official to have known to have tested positive. President Trump was asked about it as he left the White House.
No, I haven't seen him lately. I heard he tested, yeah. I have not seen him. I'm calling him later. I don't know.
President Trump outside the White House. Bloomberg News reporting that Robert O'Brien caught the virus while taking a few days off from work, spending time with his family, according to people familiar with the matter. His daughter, who is college age, became ill first, White House Economic Director Larry Kudlow telling reporters. President Trump was on his way to Morrisville, North Carolina, to visit a biotech facility that's involved in work to create a COVID-19 vaccine. It's Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies Innovation Center. And while there, the president announced a morning development involving another company.
I'm therefore proud to announce that this morning, the Moderna vaccine has officially entered phase 3 already. And that's phase 3 clinical trials, the final stage before approval. There's never been anything like this in terms of speed, nothing even close. A second vaccine is likely to enter phase 3 in a matter of days. Under Operation Warp Speed, we've shaved years off of the time that it takes to develop a vaccine, in some cases many years, and we've done it while maintaining the FDA gold standard for safety. This is the fastest a vaccine for a novel pathogen has ever gone. It's never gone like this. And if you look at where we are by phase 3, we can say ever gone by far. 4 additional promising candidates are expected to enter final trials in the coming weeks, including the Novavax vaccine being developed right here at this facility. It's an incredible facility. We're going to be making a tour in a little while, very complete tour with the folks that run it and the people that operate. We've just completed a tour of Fujifilm's innovation laboratories, and that's going to be done at much higher level in a few minutes after I'm finished, and I believe we'll take a few questions too, which we're carrying out a crucial biomanufacturing process needed to make the Novavax vaccine. This production is made possible by my administration's $1.6 billion award to Novavax as part of Operation Warp Speed. It lets us deliver the final product in a time that never has been achieved anywhere at any time for anything like this. These same manufacturing processes are being conducted on an even larger scale in College Station, Texas. Today, I'm proud to announce that HHS has just signed a $265 million contract with the Fujifilm Texas A&M Innovation Center, which is quite the place to dramatically expand their vaccine manufacturing capacity.
President Trump in Morrisville, North Carolina. A scaled-down version of the Republican National Convention still set for that state next month in Charlotte. And the president did take questions from reporters after his speech, including one on the convention.
Zachary Yates from the Raleigh News and Observer. Now that you've canceled the Jacksonville portion of the RNC, do you think Governor Cooper made the right choice in limiting attendance in Charlotte?
Well, we're actually coming to North Carolina, as you know. We're having a very major, I guess that would be the nomination night. So that's Monday. That'll be Monday. They're going to be here. And the rest we'll do in a different form. We could have done it many different ways. But I think we did the right thing. And I'm really happy that we're going to be having a piece of it, at least, and a very important piece in North Carolina. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Mr. President, your poll numbers suffered in recent months because of your handling on the pandemic. You're here now today. What's your plan going forward to prove to Americans that you're the right person?
I think the poll numbers are very good. The poll numbers we have are very good. We're leading in North Carolina. We're leading in Pennsylvania. We're leading in Arizona. Our numbers. We're leading in Arizona. We're leading nicely in Florida. I think our poll numbers are very good. We're leading substantially in Georgia. I mean, we get a lot of suppression polls. We get a lot of fake polls, just like we have fake news. I mean, it's a terrible thing when you look at it. But I had the same thing 4 years ago.
President Donald Trump won North Carolina in the 2016 election by about 4 percentage points. And an NBC News Marist poll out today shows him 7 points behind the likely presidential Democratic nominee, Joe Biden. Also today, the University of Notre Dame becoming the second university to withdraw as the host of one of this fall's three scheduled presidential debates amid the coronavirus pandemic. Notre Dame was set to host the first debate September 29th. That debate will now be hosted by Case Western Reserve University and Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland. The University of Michigan was scheduled to host the second presidential debate, but withdrew last month. That debate will now be held in Miami. On Wall Street today, the Dow was up 114, NASDAQ up 173, S&P up 23. A headline at the Wall Street Journal, Trump advisors still touting V-shaped economic recovery. The subhead says Kudlow, pointing to improving data on home sales and manufacturing, predicts unemployment will decline despite surges in new coronavirus infections. Larry Kudlow is director of the National Economic Council. He spoke with reporters today in the White House driveway.
Even with, some of the big states' difficulties, I acknowledge that. But nonetheless, the economic numbers are still coming out strong. We have a huge increase today in machinery and equipment, beat the street. We've had job gains. The weekly claims look great. I think July's unemployment rate and jobs rate, I don't have a forecast yet. I haven't seen the numbers, but I think it's going to be a solid number. There's a housing boom going on. There's auto sales and production are booming. The trucking story continues to improve, and the retailing story continues to improve. One area that is not, and I think that's because of the Texas, Florida issue, the in-house dining, whatever that's called, open dining, something or other. Maybe you guys are. Anyway, that's slipped over. All right, I acknowledge that. And my guess is there will be other data points that will show a moderation in my V-shaped recovery in July. I don't deny that. Now, I will say this. I'll let her speak for herself, but over the weekend, I'm communicating with Ambassador Deborah Birx, who's a great friend, and she's beginning to see now some stabilization in these big states and much, much improvement in Arizona. I have my fingers crossed, and I'm praying that be the case. But don't forget, please, the whole Northwest is, the whole Northeast is open. And that's a big GDP chunk, and it extends to the Midwest in most cases because you got your car plants and your manufacturing plants going. So I'm just trying to create perspective. We are scouring the numbers to see how much moderation there is, and I will be fact-based and truthful with you on that every step of the way.
Larry Kudlow is a White House economic advisor with reporters in the White House driveway. For a look at the coronavirus pandemic across the United States and the trends, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, joined C-SPAN on our morning program, Washington Journal.
Well, thanks for having me this morning. Look, I think we're going to have a rotating series of regional epidemics here in this country. What we're seeing happen is as soon as a region starts to cool down and we start to get control over the epidemic, a new region heats up. And I think we're largely in this position because we have a lot of infection all around the country. We reopened not just early, but aggressively. And so that instigated more spread. And now you have a situation where there's just so much infection that it's going to get into other parts of the country. We never fully crushed the virus in any part of this country. So the Sun Belt is actually showing signs of improvement. That's really the epicenter of the U.S. epidemic right now. States like Arizona, Texas, Florida, Southern California. There are signs of a slowing of new cases in those states, particularly Arizona and Texas. When you look at the data, it's a little less clear in Florida and Southern California. But at the same time, we're seeing infections pick up in other states. You look at Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Georgia, Ohio, Alabama, South Carolina have looked bad for a period of time. And so the gains that we're making in the states that look like they're starting to peak are now going to be offset by the other states that look like they're accelerating.
Dr. Scott Gottlieb is a former commissioner at the Food and Drug Administration, joining us on our Washington Journal morning program. There are over 4.3 million coronavirus cases in the U.S., nearly 150,000 deaths, and the rising cases and deaths also a worldwide trend. The head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, spoke to reporters in Geneva.
This Thursday marks 6 months since WHO declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern. This is the sixth time a global health emergency has been declared under the international health regulations, but it's easily the most severe. Almost 16 million cases have now been reported to WHO, and more than 640,000 deaths. And the pandemic continues to accelerate. In the past 6 weeks, the total number of cases has roughly doubled.
The chief of the WHO, Dr. Tedros, in Geneva. The United States, India, and Brazil each adding tens of thousands of new coronavirus cases per day. But while cases are growing, global deaths have remained constant at around 30,000 to 40,000 per week. Washington Today continues in a moment. And welcome back to Washington Today. A couple of other headlines: an executive order signed last week by President Trump that would exclude undocumented immigrants from census reapportionment would cost the country's three largest states at least one seat in Congress, California, Texas, and Florida, and allow three other states to keep a seat that they would otherwise have lost, Alabama, Minnesota, and Ohio. That's according to a new study by the Pew Research Center. The executive order is being challenged in court. And First Lady Melania Trump announcing plans to renovate the White House Rose Garden to make it more closely resemble the original 1962 design during the Kennedy administration and update it with improved drainage, better accessibility for those with disabilities, and new support for TV appearances. The White House said it will be paid for using private donations. An honor guard carrying the late Congressman John Lewis's casket into the Capitol Rotunda, where he will lie in state through Tuesday. En route to the Capitol, the funeral procession passed historic landmarks of the civil rights movement, including the Lincoln Memorial and Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. Inside, a service and a tribute by Whitley Phipps, founder of the U.S. Dream Academy. Congressional leaders also remembering Congressman Lewis. Here is the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
John's friend, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., famously said, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. But that is never automatic. History only bent toward what's right because people like John paid the price to help bend it. He paid that price at every Nashville lunch counter where his leadership made segregation impossible to ignore. He paid it in every jail cell where he waited out hatred and oppression. He paid that price in harassment and beatings from a bus station in South Carolina to the Edmund Pettus Bridge. John Lewis lived and worked with urgency because the task was urgent. But even though the world around him gave him every cause for bitterness, he stubbornly treated everyone with respect and love. All so that, as his friend Dr. King once put it, we could build a community at peace with itself. Today, we pray and trust that this peacemaker himself now rests in peace.
The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Capitol Rotunda ceremony. He was followed by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who introduced a video of Congressman Lewis.
When John made his speech 57 years ago, he was the youngest speaker at the March on Washington program. How fitting it is that in the final days of his life, he summoned the strength to acknowledge the young people peacefully protesting and in the same spirit of that march, taking up the unfinished work of racial justice, helping complete the journey begun more than 55 years ago. We have all seen the photographs of John being brutally beaten in Selma, which painted an iconic picture of injustice. What a beautiful contrast to see John and the mayor of Washington, who's with us today, at the Black Lives Matter Plaza, standing in solidarity with the protesters, an iconic picture of justice that will endure and will inspire our nation for years to come. John firmly focused on the future, on how to inspire the next generation to join the fight for justice. And his quote, to find a way to get in the way. As one of the youngest leaders of the Freedom Rides, March on Washington, as I said, and March to Montgomery, he understood the power of young people to change the future. When asked what someone can do who is 19 or 20 years old, the age that he was when he set out to desegregate Nashville, Lewis replied, a young person should be speaking out for what is fair, what is just, what is right. Speak out for those who have been left out and left behind. That is how the movement goes forward, John said. Imagine the great joy he had traveling the country to share that message of action with young people. No need to imagine. It is my personal privilege right now for me to yield to our beloved colleague, the distinguished gentleman from Georgia, Congressman John Lewis.
I grew up in rural Alabama, 50 miles from Montgomery, outside of a little place called Troy. My father was a sharecropper, a tenant farmer. But back in 1944, when I was only 4 years old, my father had saved $300. And with the $300, he bought 110 acres of land. My family is still on that land today. How many of you remember when you were four? Now, what happened to the rest of us? It was many, many years ago when we would visit the little town of Troy, visit Montgomery, visit Tuskegee, visit Birmingham. I saw those signs that said white men, white women, colored women, white waiting, colored waiting. I would come home and ask my mother, my father, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, why? They would say, that's the way it is. Don't get in the way. Don't get in trouble. But one day in 1955, 15 years old, in the 10th grade, I heard about Rosa Parks. I heard the words of Martin Luther King Jr. on oral radio. 1957, I met Rosa Parks at the age of 17. In 1958, at the age of 18, I met Martin Luther King Jr., and these two individuals inspired me to get in the way, to get in trouble. So I come here to say to you this morning, on this beautiful campus, with your great education, you must find a way to get in the way. You must find a way to get in trouble, the trouble, necessary trouble.
A video of the late Congressman John Lewis played during the memorial service for him inside the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. Bipartisan pairs of members of Congress, the House and Senate, laying wreaths, and the House Majority Whip James Clyburn giving the benediction. Public viewing for the lying in state was moved outside to the east front of the Capitol building to better allow for social distancing during the pandemic. Runs from 10 p.m. Eastern until 10 p.m. Eastern on Monday, and then on Tuesday from 8 a.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern. President Trump was asked whether he would be going.
No, I won't be going. No.
President Trump with reporters outside the White House. You could hear the helicopter in the background drowning things out. But President Trump saying he would not be going to pay his respects to John Lewis. Among those who will be going Monday night, Vice President Mike Pence and Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. The U.S. House today passing a bill to create a commission on the social status of black men and boys. It'll be within the U.S. Civil Rights Commission at the Justice Department. The commission will study issues like mortality and homicide rates, arrest and incarceration rates, poverty, violence, fatherhood, mentorship, drug abuse, and other issues. Congresswoman Lucy McBath spoke on the House floor about a personal story.
While we have come so far, we still have a long way to go. I know that you can do everything right as a parent and still see your child, a young black man, taken away from you for reasons that are far out of your control. When I got pregnant with my son Jordan, he was a miracle for me. I wasn't sure I was ever going to be able to have children. I dreamed of who Jordan would become. I dreamed of watching him walk across the stage at his high school graduation full of love and full of hope for the future. But almost 8 years ago, Jordan was sitting in the back seat of a car with his friends at a gas station. A man pulled up, parked next to them, and complained about the loud music that they were playing. He pulled out a gun, and he fired 10 shots into the car, hitting Jordan 3 times, killing my only son, and then he simply drove away. I believed I had done everything right. But at the end of the day, Jordan was a young black man, and I felt that injustice. So while I look back at the life and legacy of John Lewis, and I remark how far we truly have come, I must also look toward a future without my son, and I see how far we still have to go. As we vote today to create the Commission on the Social Status of Black Men and Boys, I hope we can go forward in strength and in hope, because there is always hope. It is what brings us together.
Lucy McBath, a Democrat from Georgia, on the House floor. Republican Kelly Armstrong of North Dakota also spoke in support of the bill.
Our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, declares that all men are created equal. The eastern facade of the Supreme Court pronounces equal justice under the law. However, we all know inequalities still exist. As a defense attorney, I saw how sentencing disparities on drug crimes, minimum mandatory sentencing, school zone sentencing enhancements, and pretrial release policies often had disparate racial impacts. By creating a bipartisan commission to study inequality in government programs, we take the necessary steps to identify and address disparities for Black American men and boys. This bill will help ensure that we are making meaningful progress in creating a more free and equal country.
Congressman Kelly Armstrong. The bill passed the House today by a vote of 368-1. The one no came from Republican Mo Brooks of Alabama. The bill was first introduced in March of 2019, but was fast-tracked this year after the protests erupted across the country following the killing of George Floyd. The House today also passed by voice vote a bill to create a Smithsonian National Museum of the American Latino. Congressman Tony Cardenas of California spoke in favor.
There are more than 58 million reasons as why we need a National Museum of the American Latino. Since the founding of our great nation, Latinos have been largely invisible and excluded from the history books. Our community has been used as scapegoats for the problems America faces. We are looked at as others and have been made to feel like outsiders in our own country. The root of this problem stems from a lack of knowledge and appreciation of the Latino contributions to the America's success. Now more than ever, even Latinos are being vilified and spoken of as less than. The American people deserve to learn the truth of our history and our heritage. The American Latino Museum is essential to sharing the stories and the journey of Latinos in America, from America's original sin of Native American genocide, the American Civil War, and through the Civil Rights Movement, to the horrors of the deadly El Paso shooting, where 23 people were killed at the hands of a murderer who drove hundreds of miles with the sole intent of killing as many Mexicans as possible. We must teach our entire history, the beautiful, the glorious, and the horrors and the injustices. Our story is the story of the America, of the United States of America. If we truly want to build a country that works for everyone, we must start by including everyone. We owe it to ourselves and our children to learn about Latino history in America. That's exactly what museums are for, to teach and inspire.
Congressman Tony Cardenas, Democrat from California. The bill would require the Smithsonian Institution to begin an 18-month feasibility study for this museum and select a site on the National Mall. Would also require advocates to raise at least half the cost, estimated at $700 million. Republican Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington State also speaking in favor.
The story of the American Latino is woven into the fabric of this nation. Latinos have fought in every U.S. war since the American Revolution and settled in parts of the United States before the arrival of pilgrims at Plymouth Rock. Latinos are a crucial part of the American identity. There are those of us who have explored space like astronaut Ellen Ochoa. We've brought innovation to the world like inventor Elena Mato. We've done things that few other athletes in the world could do, like baseball legend Edgar Martinez of my home state in Washington, the Seattle Mariners. And I'm proud to note personally that we've helped shape our nation's laws by serving in Congress. I've had the amazing opportunity to be the first and only Hispanic member of Congress, House or Senate, to have served from Washington State. I'd like to highlight that it was my predominantly white, smaller corner of what I would call the best part of the Pacific Northwest that bestowed upon me this amazing honor. Hispanic Americans represent the heart of the American dream, strong family values, amazing work ethic, strong faith in community and in civics. First or second term here, I remember walking down on the National Mall and seeing a protest. And it was a very peaceful protest. And unlike some that I've seen, it was families. And they were walking side by side and they were wrapping themselves in the American flag. To me, they represent the best of us.
Jamie Herrera Butler on the House floor, Republican from Washington State. The bill passing today by voice vote and now goes to the Senate. Thanks for joining us today. Download the free C-SPAN Radio app to listen to us anywhere. And remember, Washington Today is available as a podcast at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And as we go, some more from the memorial service for John Lewis in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda, where he's lying in state. Here is Wintley Phipps, founder and president of the U.S. Dream Academy.
Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah.